Welcome to Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read. My name is Raina Menashe, and I'll be your host for this segment. Today, I'm speaking with Roger Scholey, retired journalist from the San Diego Union-Tribune and author of six books, including three San Diego Memories volumes and three others on local history. My guest is also president of the Balboa Park Committee of 100 and serves on the boards of the San Diego Architectural Foundation and Friends of San Diego Architecture. That's a lot. Welcome, Roger Scholey. It's a pleasure having you on Bookshelf.
Nice to be with you, Raina.
Okay, let's begin with your history. I know that you're a third generation San Diegan. You graduated from UC San Diego in 1970 with a history degree, and you've raised your family here. How did you end up as staff writer for the UT for 44 years, and ultimately your involvement in this series?
I was a reporter for the Triton Times at UCSD and was one of the founders in the 60s. And the university does not have any journalism program. So we had to self-teach ourselves how to be reporters and editors and everything else. So that's where I got my training. Then I was also a campus correspondent for the Evening Tribune for several years. And after graduation, I made my way to the UT as a reporter and started in 1974. And I've always been interested in San Diego history. Obviously, I was a history major, so that was part of my profile. And as you know, San Diego schools do very little in the way of history teaching of the local history. You only learn it in third or fourth grade, and you never hear about it, about California or San Diego again.
Right.
So a lot of this is self-learning by San Diegans. And if you're from here, you have more chance of learning about the past through your families. But for, I don't know, 80% of San Diego residents, they were not born here. So they don't know innately what the place is about, which explains why we vote the way we do sometimes, how we forget things that happened 20 years ago because we weren't here. And my favorite expression I hear from people is, when I moved here 5 years ago, Sandy was much better than it is today. And of course, you can multiply by that 20 times for people who've moved here from one period or another. So in the newspaper, I took a special interest in covering the history of places and people that I came across. And then I started writing stories about San Diego history whenever I could, and then myself, because I didn't teach, I wasn't taught it either. Well, when I left the newspaper in March of 2018, as I was walking out the door, Jeff Light, the editor of the Union Tribune, pulled me aside and said, I have something for you to do. So he told me about this series of books by Pediment in Washington State. They have partnered with historical societies and local newspapers to do dozens and dozens of pictorial histories of their places and people and everything else. So I said, sure, I'd love to do that. So we came out with the first book in 2018 that took San Diego up to 1940. And then in 2019, I did the one from 1940 to 60. And this one that you're talking about today was 1960 to 1980. And then I have one more volume, I think, for Sandy, this particular series, 1980 to 2020. And I said, well, why do you go to 40 years period rather than 20? And the Pediment people said, as you get closer to the present, people don't think of that as history. They think of that as me. And I don't
right.
care about me because I lived through all that.
Right.
So I think that's probably one reason why we're going to pull 40 years together in quite a romp from 1980 to now. And I figured that one chapter was going to be about 2020 itself because of the pandemic. So that's the most interesting year in our lifetimes.
So we are living a fascinating history. Before we talk about the book in particular, with your perspective as a longtime journalist and a history expert, what would you say is the biggest difference that you've seen in San Diego over the years, and the biggest difference in journalism as well, if I could ask?
Of course, the biggest difference is it's grown a lot in my lifetime. I was born in 1948, so San Diego was 500,000 people about then. And now it's 1.3 million just in the city, and the county itself is 2 or 3 million. Mm-hmm. And if you bring in Tijuana, another 1.5 million, that's maybe 5 million people in our region, which is much bigger than it was 50, 75 years ago. So that's the biggest change, I think, physically in the area. The second thing is that San Diego has become a lot more diverse in terms of demographics, with a lot more ethnic variety from a wave of immigrants who've come here for the last 50 years, which is very interesting. Mm-hmm. And then as this book told me, as I was trying to find the right pictures with the History Center and the UT helping, was the role of women in San Diego. So we went out of our way to pull out pictures of women doing all sorts of things. Same thing with minority groups, trying to highlight them, giving their due, because history is typically about white male, you know, leaders, and not much about the average person. So this book, these books are about the life of San Diego residents in all manner of speaking. So from arts to work to home life, everything is supposed to be a snapshot, series of snapshots over the last, in this case, 20 years of 1960 to 1980.
So literally the way we look at the world and evaluate it has changed.
Yeah, and then you asked about the role of the media and the newspapers in this period, 1960 to 1980. I would say that in 1960, the news was basically the Union and the Tribune. That was the main source of people's information about San Diego news. And over the following 20 years, the role of TV journalism has grown a lot more significant. They're not as thorough as the newspaper, but obviously, but people get a lot of their news from watching TV. And of course, that's not at all touching on the current period where it's all online and many other sources. But in those days, it was basically news. Most people would take a newspaper. Most families would take San Diego Union and Tribune. And now it's many people don't take the newspaper. They get it online or they read other sources. So that's the big difference. I think the other difference in journalism over my career is that the idea of investigative journalism has become much more important than it used to be. If you go back and read the newspapers of earlier times, there was very little of that sort of thing, and analysis. There were sometimes columnists that got into some background, but the prevalence of investigative journalism was not really very active in San Diego until the 1970s. So starting in that period, when Jerry Warren became the editor in the 70s and was in the 80s, he specialized and urged us to be much more investigative in all realms of the coverage, not just big political scandals, but anything.
That explains a lot. Okay, well, let's talk about the latest book in this series, San Diego Memories 3, A Time of Change, as you mentioned, the 1960s and the 70s. You've told us a little bit about your collaboration with the San Diego History Center and the Union Tribune. Give our listeners more of a look at this volume. What's in it?
Well, there are 7 or 8 chapters, and each one has a certain focus. So let me just give you a sense of what those are. This is typically the categories that their pictorial histories include, but some of them are San Diego centric. For example, we have a military chapter, a maritime chapter that you wouldn't see in other cities. But we also, one thing I suggested we do, which is to lead off the book with activism, basically the political turmoil and craziness of the 60s and 70s. And in the foreword, I talked about that as well, saying the 60s and 70s is very much like what we've gone through in the last 4 or 5 years during the Trump administration, and a great deal of polarization and street, you know, demonstrations and sometimes violence outbursts. You know, it's just been, for those of us who grew up in the 60s, they said, this is just like it was when we were 20 years old. So it's been a rerun of historical trends back then. There's also other non-political kinds of things in the book: sports, leisure, public service, transportation. I also wanted to do something on the seedy side of life, which is crime, scandals. We've had a number of terrible disasters in this period that people who lived here know all about. And the final chapter is about arts and culture. So we have there are about 300 pictures that are in the book, and we can talk about how we went about doing that, because it was a lot of fun and a lot of work, though.
How did you go about doing that? Tell us.
Well, I started with a timeline, because I'm a historian, so I believe in looking at history through time and chronologically. So Mary Mati Agudo, the UT archivist, has been keeping a meticulous timeline of San Diego history, starting from the beginning, and she's always updating it with events today and findings from the past that she inserts into her chronology. So I said, well, give me the 1960 to 80 time period. So I went through and I circled all the events and things that seemed to be reminding me of what happened in the news. And then we started looking for pictures along the same lines and tried to categorize all the pictures by these different chapters. And I think we ended up about 600 or 700 candidates. And then Pediment editors pulled out the ones they thought were the most compelling pictures. And that was about done in April last year. And then I went to work to research all the pictures we picked. I didn't want to do that first because I didn't want to research something that wouldn't show up in the book. So luckily I have access to the UT's digital archives back to the beginning. And so I was able to plug in an event or the date of whatever the picture was and find the story that's tied to the picture.
Wow.
Which is very much different, much more revealing than you realize, because the pictures the History Center has does not have any of that sort of information on the picture. It just says, right, seeing, you know, traffic congestion on Torrey Pines Road. Well, I looked up the picture the story that went with that is all about the congestion and that the fact the freeway was under construction nearby and that would relieve the traffic congestion. So there's lots of examples of that where the picture doesn't say 1,000 words. You have to look up the words to see the real information.
Well, I would think if you change some of the cars and the clothing, the picture might look similar to, say, a current time, but the explanation, the reason, the context is so different, right?
Exactly. Yeah, the details make the story. So I mean, sometimes these picture books that you get are not very revealing substance-wise. They're just a couple of lines about describing something that you can see just by looking at it. So I wanted to make this really a book about an information-packed book. So I hope people actually read the captions, because they're going to learn a lot about San Diego history by reading what the pictures are all about. So
it sounds like
I could have written a book about the San Diego 1960 to 80. Richard Perrault wrote a series of books for the UT back then, and he got into great detail. But after writing my other books, I began to realize people like pictures, they don't like to read, which is pathetic. But
that's another story, another interview.
So I wanted to pack in as much information as possible in these captions. And sometimes they went overboard and went to great lengths to check people's names and addresses, names and backgrounds, and even found obituaries of people who died who kind of revealed some information about them that wasn't evident at the time of the story, the picture that was run. And I've just found one mistake somebody sent me, which had to do with the Padres sometimes. So we do make mistakes. I tried my best to avoid them, but we did what we could to check everything out.
It sounds like a fun process overall.
It was.
Now, San Diego is famous for being called America's finest city. Do you have any historical perspective on how that came about? And if any of that is reflected, well, I'm sure it's reflected in the series, but what's the history of that?
Well, the phrase America's finest city has a very particular origin. That was the decision by the Republican National Committee to pull out the 1972 election or convention from San Diego over a series of scandals going on about that convention. So Pete Wilson was the mayor at the time, and his press assistant, Aldo Boss, a former UT reporter, wrote a speech about the what we would do in as San Diego to counteract the bad publicity that came of losing this convention. So they declared America's Finest City Week for the same week of the Republican convention. And that phrase stuck, and it became, we had America's Finest City Week for many years, and Finest City Marathon and lots of other things. But parenthetically, actually, I should admit this, at that year, I was actually working in Washington, D.C. at the Republican National Committee. So I was on the other end of the news where they decided they had to pull the convention out of San Diego and what went into trying to quickly move it to Miami Beach, which is where the Democrats had their convention as well. So I was, you know, a big booster of San Diego, and I was carrying San Diego's torch in the RNC saying, hey, that's terrible. We should stay in San Diego. And of course they didn't, but it was fun watching it from afar.
Isn't that amazing how the slogan stuck? Yeah. In Memories 3, what is your very favorite picture and caption? What makes it your favorite?
Oh, well, my favorite is on the back cover of it, and it's on, it's on page 159, and it shows two kids at Comic-Con in 1976. And they're both sitting there reading a Howard the Duck comic book, which is really, but what I love about this picture is it tells several stories. First of all, comics. Second, Comic-Con, which is a San Diego creation.
Right.
And these two boys, one black and one white, sitting there as chums reading this comic book. So if you want something symbolic about San Diego's progress and being a diverse city and a fun city and everything else, this picture says it all. So that's my all-time favorite in this book. And when I came across it, I said, this is fantastic. I tried to find these two kids, but I wasn't able to track them down.
Interesting. It sounds iconic. Yeah. Now, the architectural boards and the other committees that you're involved in, do they inspire your work? Do you think you'd be getting involved with the same projects without the involvement in all those boards?
It grew out of my job at the UT for most of my career was growth and development. And so I was very interested in San Diego's growth and its buildings and planning of San Diego and architecture and everything else. So, one feeds the other, you know, and there's a lot of development type pictures I wanted to put in this book because that's my favorite thing is how San Diego grew physically. And so when I serve on those two groups and the Committee of 100 in Balboa Park, always being mindful of San Diego's architecture and the need to save pieces of the past, because if you don't have them, you don't think about the past. So there's been this book has some of that in here, some historic preservation mentions. And so in the 1960s, that's actually when the whole U.S. became much more interested in historic preservation than it had been in the past. And the federal government passed a law creating the National Register of Historic Places, and San Diego created its historic site board. And other groups like Save Our Heritage Organization were formed at the time that in our group, the Committee of 100 at Balboa Park, also in the 1960s, because while San Diego was rushing ahead in the 60s and 70s with growth and development and thousands of people moving here and building new subdivisions all over the place, it also had a very valuable elements from the past to save. And the Gaston Quarter, for example, was the association was founded in the 70s to save those buildings on Fifth Avenue downtown. And some buildings were lost, and we show pictures of that. Mm-hmm. But others have been saved or restored or reconstructed. So we still have a lot to look to, but we've lost quite a lot of important buildings, including this year, the stadium is being demolished. You know, I I mentioned there's a nice pictures of the stadium being built in 1965 to 67, but the next volume will show the stadium being demolished. You know, that's, to me, that's one of the great crazy things about San Diego is we build something and 50 years later, we throw it away. Horton Plaza Shopping Center is going through right now. So this is history in the making. That's what, it's an American thing to throw away the past and don't remember it. That's good and bad in some ways.
Yeah, that leads me to, I guess, the question, why does it matter? Why is it so important for us to look back as well as forward?
Well, there's the usual statement that if you forget the past, you're condemned to repeat it. Well, you never repeat the history. It never happens that way. But there's certain things that come up in one time, and then a couple of generations later, we find it up again. I mean, this whole thing of right now we're going through with the Republican Party trying to battle back the QAnon people just shows you how dangerous forgetting the past can be. I mean, I was thinking, you know, now we know why Hitler was able to take over Germany with a minority of people, because the vast majority of Germans didn't take him seriously. Well, this is exactly what we're witnessing today with this whole battle of the QAnon people and the fake news people and all that. They just pick their own facts or create them or invent them. And if the public doesn't doesn't educate itself, they're going to be, you know, going to face some totalitarian results in the U.S. In the rest of the world, you know, that they were surprised the U.S. came this way. But if you read American history, we've had this sort of thing happen over and over again.
Right.
From the Revolutionary War to the Civil War, all of our battles have had this sort of conflict between groups, between regions, between people, between generations. This is nothing new. If you don't read you don't learn the history, you're gonna make the wrong decisions, I think, and when you go to the ballot box. So I wish that we would have. Well, Texas apparently is a very good state for learning, teaching local history, state history, partly because they were separate country for some years in the 1830s and 40s. But California doesn't take any of that seriously. So there was a lot of talk and action at the state level in California in order to make people more aware of diversity and minority groups and their contributions to California. I'm hoping that effort broadens out to the general story of California and San Diego and other localities, because we could use a lot more real knowledge of that personally than we do now.
Yeah, so let's hope history finds its way back into all levels of schooling, right? Yeah,
it never was. I mean, actually, it's never been a priority in the sense I'm talking about. So,
okay, good point.
It'd be nice to take that on.
Very good. I've got one last question for you. Tell us just a little bit more about what you're working on now and when we can expect to see it in print.
Okay, well, the plan is this year, which I haven't started yet, to work on the last copy of the last entry in the series, San Diego Memories, 1980 to 2020. And it's going to take in the same categories as we've had in the past. As I said at the outset, I think one chapter probably will be devoted to the pandemic year, because that is just an amazing thing that happened here and around the country, around the world. So just as we had an activism chapter in the 1960 to 80 book, I think 2020 will be sort of the opening chapter of the story, because even though it's contemporary, it's going to be something everyone remember forever, I think.
Right.
So I'm going to go through with Mary and start with the chronology of the last 40 years and start to pick up pictures. Now, the difference between this book and the last ones was the History Center had a wealth of 2 or 3 million images that we could draw from. They're all been cataloged. You could just go on their website and find pictures, and which I did. They don't have virtually anything from 1980, because their collection is mostly Union Tribune negatives and photos. So those were the four pictures in his book, and all the other books, to the extent we had them. The new issue, the news book, was going to be totally relying on UT file photos, and I don't have access to them at my home computer yet. I hope I can, because otherwise Mary's going to do all the work finding them. But it's going to make it, it'll be similarly organized by finding the pictures, tracking down the stories that go with the pictures, and then writing the captions to go with them. So I think they'll, if everything goes well, we'll finish this by in time for the holidays this coming year.
I can't wait to see it. I think it will be a fascinating enterprise choosing the cover picture. There's so many choices.
I've been thinking about this. And what is the, what is the one, and in this case, the picture we did in this book was John F. Kennedy at a pre-election rally in San Diego in 1960 during the presidential campaign. We picked that. I said, gee, what happens if Trump gets reelected? This will look kind of strange to have Kennedy on the cover, but it was a time of change. He was a new generation, you know, so that in many ways that was a very good choice for this book. But for the 1980 to 2020, I mean, there's so many possibilities, and it's somewhat inspiring, not a negative thing, but some, because we could have all kinds of pictures on the cover that are kind of scary,
right?
Or we could have something that's in ennobling, you might say,
so inspiring or hopeful at least.
Yeah. So I will just kind of, I mean, you could have someone with a shot in the arm or getting a virus,
right.
A little bit too specific, but we'll find something will come out. And what happens is Peniman goes through and picks all the pictures and puts them in the layout, and then they come up, they pick several of them as potential cover pictures, and we all weigh in on which ones we think are the best, and then they pick the one because they're in charge.
Well, if you need another vote, let me know.
Okay.
Roger, our time is up, but thank you so much for joining us. It was really a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you. I'm glad to talk to you too, Raina.
To contact Roger Scholey, please write him at rmscholey. That's Scholey at yahoo.com.
Oh, we should also mention how people can get the book, because it isn't available in stores. So they can get it online by going to pediment.com. That's the publisher. And you could write me if you want to get a copy that I can autograph. So you can send me a request as well.
Very good. An autographed copy for your coffee table.
Right.
Again, this is Raina Menashe. And you have been listening to East County Magazine's Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read.